because of death threats from anti-gun activists. Dana Loesch said the gun control advocates posted photos of her house online along with her home address. Then while police were there investigating, called to say they would gun the family down in their front yard. Gun control advocates also threatened specifically to track and shoot Loesch's children. Get more news online at usaradio.com.
Hi, my name is Kip Herridge, and I'm the founder of the Vertical Research Advisory, or VRA. After 15 years on Wall Street, I founded the VRA in 2003, my daily investment newsletter that's been crushing the market for 14 years. I tell you what to buy and when to sell and take profits, and I only target stocks that have the ability to rise by 50% or more. For the first time, we're offering a free two-week membership. Simply go to VRAinsider.com. You also get my new book, Crash Proof Prosperity, Becoming Wealthy in the Age of Trump. Join us now at VRAinsider.com.
Members of the European Union are now rallying around the Iran nuclear deal, saying they're going to do everything they can to save it. Here's Bill Zinfer.
Meeting in Luxembourg, EU foreign ministers said any altering of the agreement could have serious consequences for peace. Germany and France are leading the way on the issue, saying President Trump's decision to decertify the deal could lead to a military confrontation with Iran. The EU is also looking at ways to deal with Iran's ballistic missile program, which is not part of the nuclear deal.
Scientists are taking a close look at the brain of the Las Vegas killer, hoping to find some clues to why he did what he did. Correspondent Chris Barnes looks at the story.
Specialists at Stanford University are closely examining Stephen Paddock's brain. A routine autopsy last week in Las Vegas didn't reveal any obvious abnormalities with it, but the specialists at Stanford are now microscopically examining Paddock's brain tissue, looking for evidence of conditions like dementia or CTE, which can lead to violent behavior. The 64-year-old retired accountant opened fire from the 32nd floor of a hotel on the Strip into a crowd at a country music festival, killing 58 people and injuring over 500 others back on the 1st of October. I'm Chris Barnes.
New York police say they are investigating two credible allegations against Hollywood movie mogul Harvey Weinstein. An official noted two allegations currently under investigation are different from a 2015 investigation. USA Radio News.
Radio. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the Trump administration still seeks a diplomatic solution to the nuclear weapons crisis with North Korea. Appearing on CNN's State of the Union, Tillerson said diplomatic efforts will continue, in his words, until the first bomb drops. Additionally, Tillerson says President Trump does not want to go to war with North Korea.
President Trump's not only going to finish this term, he's going to win with four.
And if you missed the news, here's correspondent Lisa Campbell to lay out the facts.
The U.S. government announced the 2% Social Security hike on Friday as a way to keep up with the rising cost of living. The average recipient's check is currently about $1,377 a month and will go up by $27 a month next year. More than 66 million Americans get Social Security checks every month, most of whom are seniors over 65 or individuals with disabilities. Next year's increase will be the first significant hike since 2011.
U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer wants federal officials to put more restrictions on electronic cigarettes. He says e-cigs are becoming more popular with teenagers and young adults, and the senator from New York says the Food and Drug Administration needs to add more regulations, like prohibiting e-cigs from being sold in vending machines. And free agent quarterback Colin Kaepernick is filing a complaint against NFL owners for collusion. Kaepernick filing the grievance yesterday morning and hiring well-known attorney Mark Garagos. And in a statement, his legal team says he shouldn't be punished for his national anthem protests and that he wants to get back on the field. Kaepernick's been unsigned for 6 weeks of the NFL season after opting out of his contract with San Francisco. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Tune in every Monday morning at 10 a.m. on Hunter and Chamber Radio for Chamber in Action with Chamber President Chris Phelan and Good Morning host
Everybody
Big C. We'll keep you informed
Everybody
on all the issues, all the initiatives of the Hunter County Chamber of Commerce and our business community here in Hunter.
Did you know the Hunter County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info.
My name is 806. It's time for Hunter Chamber.
The Hunter County
Radio
Chamber
Weather.
Of Commerce, the voice of business.
Flemington right now, it is 57 degrees. It's mostly cloudy skies, and there's a 20% chance of precipitation for today. We have a frost advisory in effect that will happen tomorrow morning, 4 a.m. to 9 a.m. We're going to get down into the 30s, folks. Welcome to October. A little hard to get used to. Today is October 16th, Monday, 2017. Chance of...
Good afternoon. The weather today is going to be partly sunny. Well, it's been cloudy all day around here with a high near 61. Northwest winds around 15 miles an hour. Tonight it'll be mostly clear with a low around 35 and north winds 7 to 13 miles an hour. Tuesday, areas of frost before 10 a.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 62. Tuesday night it'll be clear with a low around 38. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 69, calm winds becoming southwest 5 to 7 miles an hour in the afternoon. Wednesday night will be clear with a low around 43. Thursday is supposed to be sunny with a high near 71. Thursday might mostly cloudy, or mostly clear rather, I'm sorry, with a low around 49.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness?
Try that.
NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. Hello. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there's a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff, and we work out of our houses. What we try to do is we try to help people who have a mental illness, either get them to the right area of treatment or anything that we can do to help them. We also run support groups.
All you had to say was please move.
And we run support groups and we have family-to-family classes. And what we do is we try to, everything we do is free. There is no charge or anything. So if you need more information or would like some, help with certain things, you can call us at 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have somebody that checks at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you. Today we are very privileged to have with us Michelle Hammer. I met Michelle at a presentation she was doing for the Somerville, New Jersey chapter of NAMI. I know you told me, Michelle, that you were very nervous when you did the presentation, but as I said, you did an awesome job, so I really appreciate you coming on today.
Oh, no problem.
What I'd like to do is maybe let you start telling your story, and maybe Tracy and I can maybe ask questions as you go through it. How's that sound?
Start telling my story? Well, what about my story do you want to hear?
Well, all right. At what age did you first become aware that you had a mental health problem?
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I first exhibited any kind of symptoms of a mental health issue maybe when I was about 9 years old. But I never really got help for anything until I realized that I had a mental health issue when I was 18. When I was 18, I was told I was bipolar very, very quickly from my college health center. I didn't really think the diagnosis was correct, but I just kind of went with it because I knew something was wrong. Things went up, things went down, things went crazy, but somehow I managed to make it through college. And then at 22, I found a new doctor. I was more open and honest with him, and he diagnosed me with schizophrenia, and it was kind of like the best thing that ever happened to me because then I got on the right medication, and I feel as good as I could possibly feel right now.
When you were first aware of some symptoms, I said, when you were first aware of some symptoms, did your parents or friends or anything notice? And if they did, what was their reaction to that?
I mean, for noticing, I guess I would say that, I think my mom knew there was something wrong. Like, I didn't want to do a lot of my homework in school. I didn't want to do well. I didn't really want to do anything. And it was kind of just like I was so depressed all the time. I didn't want to really be part of anything at all. The only thing that I liked was my lacrosse team. So that was, the biggest change in my life, being on a lacrosse team, having a coach, having friends, being part of something. And that really changed my life because I ended up playing all through college and everything like that. So it's really moving for lacrosse. I don't really know where I'd be right now because I don't really know if I would have even graduated college, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I guess the symptoms showed, but I kind of put them in a different place, put them into, sports and stuff, tried in school, didn't really try in school, but my mom tried to get me help, but because I was so paranoid, I didn't really believe that she was trying to help me. I thought she was trying to hurt me, which is really unfortunate. But then when I went to college, I started getting all these same paranoid thoughts about my roommate, and that's when I realized that it wasn't them, it was me. I'm just the one who's really paranoid, and I'm thinking people are trying to hurt me when they're not.
Right, right.
Yeah.
When you were in high school, did you talk to a therapist or anything like that?
My mom brought me to a few, but I just didn't say anything. I wouldn't even look at them.
What happened when you were 9? You said you first noticed something, Michelle.
When I was 9, I say 9 because I remember riding my bike down the street, wishing that I got hit by a car. So that's why I say 9 years old.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And from nine through your early teen years, how was that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, not easy. You're not easy. It's never easy growing up at all.
No,
I mean,
that's true.
Yeah, so I mean, I was
I have
very,
four kids. I know what you mean.
Yeah, you know, it's not easy growing up ever, especially when you have a mental illness, especially when it's schizophrenia and you don't know about it, especially when you're paranoid and you don't know about it, and especially when you're a girl growing up and it's just horrible because, you know, people do talk about you behind your back, but when you're paranoid, you think everybody's talking about you behind your back. But
right.
It's also very narcissistic because you're like, why do I think everyone's talking about me? Nobody's talking about me, but I thought everyone was talking about me and that everybody hated me. Everybody thought all these things about me when really it just wasn't true. I was just making mm-hmm. it all up. Mm-hmm.
Right. In your mind, it was true, though.
And in my mind, I was thinking so many horrible
right.
things.
Like, right.
But, you know, who knows? Maybe people didn't like me, but I made it so much bigger than it really, 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 really was. Like,
right.
I just wish that I could just go back and just be confident in myself and just not care what other people thought, if it was true or if it was not true, and just live my life how I wanted to live it. I feel like I lived in fear. I was scared all the time. I just didn't know what to do because I didn't want to make mistakes. You know, I was also in class. I would never participate in class because I didn't want to get a wrong answer. I was always afraid of that. I didn't want to be shamed by having a wrong answer. I didn't want people to see the grades on my test because I didn't want to see poor grades. I didn't like to write essays for English class because I didn't think I was good at writing, and then I didn't want my teacher to think I was stupid, so I just wouldn't hand them in.
Right, right. I know some of those because I don't know if I remember mentioned it to you when I saw you there at the presentation that you gave, but my youngest son is paranoid schizophrenic. And so, you know, and the first 15 years were hell, pure hell. He was hospitalized for almost 3 years constantly in state hospitals, continuously rather, not let go and then go back in. And then he was, after the almost 3 years of hospitalization, when he got out, he was in and out of the hospital more times than we care to remember, you know. And, and you know, looking back, hindsight is always 20/20, you know.
Of course.
And looking back, we were saying, oh, gee, you know, we should have picked this up. But we had three other teenagers, and we just wrote it off to being a teenager, you know? And unfortunately, it wasn't, you know? But when he went to his first, when he came home for at Christmas for his first semester of college, he came home, and I was going to paint. And back then, 20 years ago, you used oil-based paint, so I had a 2-gallon can of turpentine. And he drank it.
Oh,
and,
no.
And I don't know if you ever smelled turpentine or I can't imagine what it tastes like, but I know it smells like hell. And the doctors were just amazed that he didn't burn his whole throat and insides out, but he didn't.
Yeah, seriously.
And when he came out of the hospital, he was home for a couple of days. He attempted suicide again, and then he wound up going to Trenton Psych for, you know, almost 20 months and Hagedorn State Hospital here for another 11 months.
I can't even imagine that.
So
I think the psych ward is the scariest, most horrible place to ever be. I hate it there. I never want to go back. My goal is to never go back.
Right.
Right.
It's
well,
horrible.
I would
only,
hope. You
only
know.
Were there once then?
What?
You were only there once then?
I was there 3 times.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My longest visit was 6 days. Mm-hmm. And it was just the worst ever. It's so horrible. And it's, I don't know if you know from him, but it's mostly men. Like, it's mostly men.
Well, weren't they segregated?
No.
Really? Because when my son was in the state hospital here in Trenton Psych and also in Hagedorn, which has since been closed, but it was a state hospital also here, they segregated the men and women and boys and girls or whatever.
I was not segregated whatsoever.
Wow.
It was mostly dudes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bunch of times we weren't let outside in some places. They said, no, you can't go outside. I said, why not? They're like, well, somebody, we used to allow them to do that, and then somebody did something, so we can't do it anymore. I said, so I'm trapped in here? Mm-hmm. And they're basically like, well, we can't let you out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's just, and then they wake you up at 7 a.m. every morning to do nothing all day.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, the one good thing is that, I don't say good thing because, you know, I wish he didn't smoke, but he does. But from all research done, nicotine supposedly calms the voices in the mind. And they say it's a proven fact. I don't know if it is or not, but, you know, I figure that he doesn't have a lot else going for him. So if he wants to smoke, that's fine, you know. But he's doing very well now, actually. I have to say that.
I'm glad he's doing well.
He's got his own apartment, and he takes his meds religiously, and he works part-time at BJ's 3-4 days a week sometimes. And, you know,
well, that's great that he has a job. That's awesome. I'm glad he's doing great.
Yes, and, you know. But, you know, you always look, and, you know, it's always great to, you know, enjoy the good times. But you always watch out because there a bad time could come, you know.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's sad, but that's the way it is.
Michelle, are you saying... Yeah, sorry. Are you saying that when you were 22 and you got on the right medication pretty much right away, or did it take a while?
Would you say, did I get on the right medication right away?
Yes.
Well, no, I went through a really long process. The first medications I went on, I was told they were for bipolar medications. I took them. They made me miserable. Mm-hmm. I hated them, but I was never told about the, like, that medication can make you feel more depressed. Mm-hmm. So a whole crazy big event happened at school. Things went nuts. I ended up in the psych ward after having a huge fight with a cop, and I just threw those medications away and said I wasn't going to take medication anymore. Right. Didn't end up well because I went back to the hospital a few months later. Mm-hmm. So then eventually I saw a new doctor. I got put on another medication that I had to take 3 times a day. And if I didn't take it 3 times a day, I would drop off and just get really mad and angry. Coming home from college, then I was on no medication because I left that doctor, got a new doctor, was more honest about everything, and then over a process of 2 years, I then got on the right medication that I'm on now, and now I feel great, and now, you know, I have my own business, I'm doing my own thing, and I'm loving life.
Well, that's great, and, you know, the problem, too, is, like, with my son, he's been epileptic since he's 5. So the epilepsy medicine would interfere with the psychotic medicine, and they could never get a combination that worked together until a few years ago.
I know I take anti-seizure medication as a for side effects of other medications.
Right.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. And you notice the thing is, too, that a lot of families will, you know, tell me that, oh, their daughter doesn't want to take medication. She refuses. Well, a lot of medication, if you take it, I know it happened to my son, and I know it happened to girls. If you take it, you gain 30 pounds. Now, who wants to be a 20-year-old that gains 30 pounds, you know, or even a 17-year-old or whatever, you know?
Right, yeah. So, yeah, I take the medication Zyprexa, and it's a really good schizophrenia medication. The only downside is that it makes you gain a lot of weight. So to combat that, I take the medication Topiramate, and that, like, combats the weight gain, and I actually lost a bunch of weight because of that. So that's the medication I take as to fix the side effects of Zyprexa, which is, like, really great. Because I took Zyprexa once in the morning before I, like, really knew. I went to Chipotle for lunch, had a humongous burrito, and I was so hungry, I could have had 5 more burritos and maybe still have been hungry.
Right, right. Well, I got to tell you, having seen you in person, you're no way overweight. You know, so.
Thank you. Yeah,
no,
thank
I'm
you.
Serious.
I appreciate
you know, that. You're not. You. And
yeah, but no, I know a lot of people with mental health issues who have gained a lot of weight because I'm part of Fountain House, which is an organization in New York City that helps out with people with mental illnesses. It's like
what whole was the name
kind
of it?
Community.
Fountain House.
Oh, yeah. I've contributed to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome. So I know a bunch of people from there, and we talk about it. And, yeah, one of my friends, like, his medication makes him gain a lot of weight. And I explained to him, like, that other medication that helped me lose weight. He said he tried it, he took it, and it made him feel sick. So that's really unfortunate because it's just his medication making him gain weight.
Yeah.
Which,
And you know,
because that's just going to make you upset, you know?
Right, exactly. And you know, the problem too is that what may work for you may not work for me, because our bodies are different and they process things differently. You know, you may be able to take aspirin and I can't, you know, or vice versa, you know, so it's sad, but you know, they come up with all these medications and unfortunately it's not one size fits all, you know, it's a shame, but that's the way it is, you know.
I mean, somebody approached me at my pop-up shop or something and they were like, oh, they're talking about her. The husband was talking about his wife. He's like, oh, she works with a schizophrenia medication. And I go, oh, which one? She goes, Abilify. And I go, oh, I hated that one. I didn't realize that was really insulting, but I was just kind of saying, I hated that one. Abilify sucked for me. I worked for other people, but I personally, I hated that one.
Right. And that's what happens, you though. Know? But it works for other people. And, you know, so... And, you know, the unfortunate thing, too, is when someone goes to a psychiatrist or, you know, some kind of doctor, the first thing they try is medications that have been proven in the past to work.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't always work with the person. You know, some get lucky, and yeah, they do, but a lot don't. So now they got to add another one. You know, I remember distinctly the one medication my son was on caused them to slap his hand, you know, on the table or the car door or whatever. And then if he stopped that, and he bounced his foot up and down and so on and so forth. So when we went to the doctor says, oh, I have to give you a medication to stop that. Oh, wait a minute. Whoa, time out. You know, you're giving him a medication to stop reactions that he's having from another medication. So, I mean, what are we going to do? Just keep piling it on? If this medication you give him has a reaction and then you're going to give him something else? I said, you better find a medication that works. You know,
When I was first trying to take antidepressants when I was younger, I was given Wellbutrin. And I took Wellbutrin, and then all of a sudden, like, I was jumping out of my skin. I couldn't sit still. I didn't know what was going on. So I just stopped taking the Wellbutrin. But then with my new current doctor, I explained that to him. And he said, oh, that's akathisia. To get rid of akathisia, take this pill Cogentin along with your antidepressant, and you won't get akathisia anymore. Here you go. So if somebody had just given me Cogentin when I was on a Wellbutrin, I would have been completely fine when I was 19 years old.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So that's just really frustrating to me that the hospital that I was in that prescribed me Wellbutrin didn't know that I was that this was happening. I called them. I said, I took this pill. This is what's happening to me. And they told me, you have to talk to your outpatient doctor. I talked to the outpatient doctor. She said, you should call the hospital. So I called the hospital. They told me to talk to her. I talked to her. They told me to call the hospital. What was I supposed to do? I just stopped taking Wellbutrin.
Right, right. And, you know, it's sad. It really is because, you know, these medications are out there, and the purpose supposedly is to help people and not get them to take 10 times more, you know, or 10 different medications, you know.
I mean, yeah, they do help. It's just unfortunate that not all doctors know what to do because.
Right.
How does my doctor now know that that was 100% akathisia and knew that Cogentin would fix it, but the doctor I had when I was 19 had no response for me, didn't know what it was, didn't know how to fix it, and didn't tell me what I should do, and just said go talk to the outpatient, and the outpatient didn't know what to do either. So.
Right.
I don't understand why those doctors didn't know about what akathisia was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of times
it's really frustrating.
Exactly. You know,
If I was given Cogentin when I was 19 years old, I could have been on Wellbutrin and been so much better.
Right.
Right. It's like you lost a couple of years there.
I lost years of my life because I wasn't prescribed the right medication.
Right.
And, you know, the ironic thing is, just to keep it short from my end, but my son was going to a doctor who was from India. And in India, he was going to him for his seizures, for his epilepsy. And in India, they had a medication for the last 25 to 30 years that cost about $3 U.S. dollars for a 30-day supply. His doctor would smuggle that medication back into this country to give it to his patients who were having 20, 30 seizures a day. My son was more fortunate. He was having like 7 or 8 a week. but they were having 20 to 30 a day, and he would smuggle his medication back in and give it to them. It's been in Europe for about 20 years, Canada uh-huh. for about 15, and it runs anywhere from like in Europe to Canada, it runs like $25 to $30 for a 30-day supply. You know what it is in this country? When they finally brought it in about 3 years ago?
How much?
$980 for a 30-day supply. Now, you tell me the average person, like my son, who's working 15, 20 hours a week part-time, making just above minimum wage, has to pay his rent in his apartment, he has to pay his electric, he has to buy food, he has to pay sometimes copay on his medications. You tell me how somebody like that can afford that. Yeah. There's no way. There's no way in hell. And, you know.
Yeah, that's insane.
It is. It is totally insane. And my son is fortunate. He takes the medication, and it's covered by Medicare or Medicaid, one of those. I'm not sure which. But it does cover it. Most of it. Not all of it. He has to pay a copay on it. But mm-hmm. he hasn't had a seizure in over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And he used to have 7 to 8 a week. And hasn't had one in over 2 years because of that medication. And, you know, it's just like medical prescription people, I don't get along with. You know? Because, okay, they want to make money, but, you know, really? Almost $1,000 for a 30-day supply for people who can't afford, you know, maybe $50 a month?
That's ridiculous.
It
that's
is ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
It is. Okay. When you went to college, was your illness better or worse when you went?
Was it worse?
Okay.
Yeah.
Really hard to get through then.
Yeah. How did you deal with it then?
I had the best friends I could ever possibly have that I lived with, and I had my lacrosse team and my lacrosse coach. Mm-hmm. And I had that medication that I had to take 3 times a day. My coach would say to me, she could tell that within like about 2 minutes of talking to me, or less than that, more like 30 seconds of talking to me, she could tell it whether I had taken my medication or not. And yeah, when I wouldn't take it, I would act out of practice. I would be silly. I would just run around like a maniac. So I had my coach really watching me all the time. Mm-hmm. And then by my senior year, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to accept that I need medication. I'm going to take it. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do, and everything's going to be good. And then she saw the whole change in me. I was acting better. I was acting nicer. I wasn't acting out. Everything was fine. And then she asked me to be team captain my senior year.
Wow.
But I really do think that without my lacrosse team, my lacrosse coach in college, that I would never have graduated. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's awesome that you did. You know, I really do, because a lot of people facing those kind of battles, if you want to call them that, for lack of a better word, you know, wouldn't have succeeded. And it's a lot easier to say the hell with it and give up than it is to go on and fight through it, you know. And that's why I give people like yourself and my son a lot of credit, and a lot of other people too, not only, you know, you two, but a lot of other also.
Your support system was,
you know,
there really,
you know, for going through. And, you know, a lot of times that's what helps, is the support system. You know, you said you had great friends and, you know, good doctor and everything, and that all helps, you know. I know a lot of people who come to NAMI in Hunterdon County or call us on the phone or whatever and say that, you know, they don't have anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, so to them there's no incentive to do anything because they don't have anybody to, you know, prove it to, you know.
Right. I know that I'm schizophrenic, and but I do say this all the time, is that I'm a very lucky schizophrenic person. I mean, I'm lucky. I have my family, my friends, and my doctor. And
right.
I know if I didn't have those, you know, that support system, that I could be so easily one of those homeless schizophrenic people living on the street. And that's so much why I wanted to start my clothing line, was like I saw this homeless schizophrenic guy on the subway who was talking to himself in the same mannerisms that I do. So I thought, like, you know, what's the difference between me and him? And the only difference is that I have the support system and he doesn't.
Right.
And I just wanted to try to, like, raise awareness, make a change, like, all over New York City, you can see homeless schizophrenic people, homeless people with mental illnesses. Not saying that all homeless people have mental illnesses.
No, absolutely.
But, you know, you would see them all over the place, and it just upsets me because I have a mental illness, but I live a functional, a pretty functional life. Mm-hmm. And I know that other people in New York City do too, but they don't tell anyone about their mental illness.
Right.
So
right.
There's so much stigma because you only associate it with the people that are so obviously mentally ill, you know, begging. So right. My whole thing is, if people were just being more open and honest, then there wouldn't be mm-hmm. so much stigma, because one in five New Yorkers has a mental health issue.
That's
therefore,
right.
There's a million people in New York City with a mental health issue.
Right.
So I don't understand why there's so much stigma. It's ridiculous to me.
And you know, the thing is, too, that when do you hear about someone with a mental illness? When they go off the charts and there are a shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time. You don't hear about people like yourself who are helping other people who have gone through this and are living a life, or like, you know, my son or others like them. All you hear about is the person who went off the charts and shot somebody or killed somebody or
exactly.
whatever.
You only hear that. You don't hear the good stories.
No, you don't.
You don't hear the recovery stories. You
right.
don't hear that. Right. You only hear somebody who's running around with a hammer, so they shot him.
Right.
So I think that took a lot of courage for you to name your company schizophrenic.nyc.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, something that would just attract people to go, what is this?
Uh-huh.
You know, my whole thing is that if people come over and they're like, what is this? And then mm-hmm. I explain. And then they really kind of like it. You know, I say that I use the medium of artwork and clothing to spread awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do.
So
to spread awareness for the homeless or the homeless mentally ill or just the mentally ill in New York City. And just educate people. And I talk to people at my pop-up shop when I'm selling their merch all the time. And it's either they have a mental illness, they have a friend with a mental illness, or somebody in their family has a mental illness.
Exactly.
All
you can talk
to
all the time. That's right.
All the time.
And, you know, the average person that you're going to talk to has someone. They either know someone, work with someone, or have someone in their family.
Exactly.
You know.
Even that blows my mind even more, why is there so much stigma? If I can relate to so many people, why is there so much stigma?
Well, you know, the problem is, too, is that most of the people don't associate mental illness as an illness. They don't. You know, they wouldn't do the same thing with cancer or diabetes.
Well, actually, do you remember at the speech in New Jersey when that guy asked me would I replace my medication with meditation? Do you remember that question?
Right, right.
What I said, I kind of briefly said I could, but that wouldn't work. But what I really should have said was that was a question that had to do a lot with stigma. Because if I had cancer, would you replace your chemotherapy with meditation?
Right.
You know, you wouldn't do that. If I had diabetes, right. would you tell me to stop taking insulin and meditate instead?
Exactly.
If I had heart disease, would you say stop taking your medication and meditate instead? You know, just because you have a mental illness doesn't mean you can stop taking medication and meditate instead. It's an illness. It's a disease. If you can't meditate your cancer away, you can't meditate your schizophrenia away.
Exactly. But you can use meditation along with your medication, of course. It's not to replace it.
It's not replaceable.
Right.
No, you can't replace
right.
it.
Exactly.
You can't replace insulin with meditation. You can't replace schizophrenia medication with meditation.
I have to tell you, Michelle, when the guy asked that question, I had to bite my tongue. I really did. I gave you a lot of credit for answering it the way you did, because I would have lost it. You know?
Yeah, when he said that, I just go, I could try, but it's not going to work.
Right, and that's what I said. It's I would have, you know, my partner over here is laughing because she knows me. But I would have just, I had to bite my tongue.
I feel like I should have told him that that was more of a question that had, that was stigma right there. Because I think he said that he was a parent of a person with schizophrenia.
Right.
And he just didn't really know and stuff like that. But I guess he didn't realize how, stigma that question was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Very offensive thing to say to somebody. Can you replace your medication with medication?
Yeah.
Because he just didn't understand.
No. Like my mother used to say, I'm going to send you a weekly yoga pose that you can practice, and it will calm you down. I would be like, okay, Mom, yeah, that's really going to help. Yoga, okay.
Yeah, well, she was trying, though, you know.
She was trying her best.
Yeah.
She tried her best.
Because, you know, let's face it, when my son first got ill.
Yoga's not going to make my brain quiet.
No, of course not. And it's not going to, you know, chase the voices away or whatever, you know. But by the same token, I remember when my son got ill and wound up in a hospital, we didn't know where to turn, what to do. We never heard of NAMI. We never heard of anything, you know, connected with mental illness. I mean, you know, 99 and nine-tenths percent of parents, when they have children, they think, oh, well, they'll be come up. They'll be, a nurse or doctor or, you know, accountant or, you know, whatever. They never think that they're going to wind up in a state mental hospital for almost 3 years, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like, and then what do, you know? And, you know, we found out about NAMI and, you know, there's a section of the hospital called Intensive Family Support Services, and the woman that was running it at the time, she is long since retired, but she taught me how to deal with it, you know. Because the first 5-6 years of my son's illness, I wouldn't talk about it. You know, my wife would want to talk about it. I'd go in the other room and read a book, or I'd get in the car and go down to the truck stop and get coffee. You know, but it's not that I didn't love him. It's not that I wouldn't have done anything short of murder to get him out of, you know, cure his illness. But I just wouldn't talk about it. And, you know, and she taught me how to deal with it, you know, so... Since
before
then,
I was told I was schizophrenic, my mom didn't tell anybody about it. But then once I was told I was schizophrenic, my mom kept saying, oh, so I told this person what's going on with you. I told this person what's going on with you. I told this person what's going on with you. And then one day she said, I told Margo what's going on with you, because she told me about her son. I go, her son that was addicted to meth? And she goes, yeah. And then I was like, did my mother just compare me to a guy that was addicted to meth? Like, did that really just happen?
Yeah.
Yep.
I was just kind of thinking, also in addition to why I wanted to start my clothing line, I wanted to tell everyone I knew that I had schizophrenia, and then I'm okay.
Oh, I think that's such a
well, I think it's
message.
Awesome. Yeah.
So tell us about what's in your clothing line. Are there a lot of
I can't hear you. What did you say?
Tell us about what's in your clothing line. Are there a lot of anti-stigma messages? Is everything, you know, geared toward mental illness recovery? Upbeat sayings or what?
Well, my clothing line, Schizophrenic NYC, it's just a mental health clothing line where I'm trying to just raise awareness for mental illness in New York City. I have two shirts that have slogans on them. They say, one is, don't be paranoid, you look great. The other one is, it's not a delusion, you are incredible. But a bunch of them also feature, like, the Rorschach test, the inkblot test that a lot of doctors will show to patients, kind of say, what do you see in this? Have you seen this? And the thing is that I switch up the patterns and colors. So the idea is when you get the unmedicated schizophrenic to look at a plain black one, they're going to see it from a completely different perspective. So I switch up the patterns and the colors, and everyone's forced to look at it from a completely different perspective, kind of getting you to think differently and starting a discussion, because only through discussion can you really try to reduce or end stigma. So I like to say that I'm just, you know, spreading awareness for the medium of artwork and clothing.
Where did you come up with, don't be paranoid, you look great? I think that's an awesome phrase.
I was just like, I named it Schizophrenic NYC, and then I was like, oh, I need a tagline. What's a good tagline? And then I was like, oh, wait, don't be paranoid, you look great. Meaning you look great in the clothes. I was like, okay, sure. And then I didn't have that T-shirt, but people thought it was so funny. I was like, okay, I'll make a T-shirt out of it. And then somebody suggested I make a T-shirt about something a little more positive. So I was like, okay,
What was the second one you made up? You said the first one was don't be paranoid, you look great. And what was the other phrase?
It's not a delusion, you are incredible.
Oh, okay. I like that too. You
know? Yeah, yeah. Nice and positive.
Yes. You know.
Yeah.
And
it's all to just start a conversation. They're all just conversation starters. That's my whole thing. Because I just want people to start talking about mental health. Because the more you talk about it, the less stigma there's going to be. That's the whole idea behind the whole thing. Just talk about mental health. Mm-hmm. Get a conversation started. Mm-hmm. Only through an open dialogue can stigma really be reduced. If you keep it hush-hush all the time, nothing's going to change.
Right.
That's true. Right. That's true. How did you come up with the idea for business, though?
I mean, I worked in graphic web design, interactive design, and I was just not feeling working for other people anymore. Being schizophrenic and working a 9-to-5 is really, really not easy, especially when you feel like you're trapped behind a desk. I wanted to start my own business. I just started, you know, just brainstorming all kinds of things, and it just kind of happened. Mm-hmm. Just kind of came up with it. Did a lot of trial and error. Things have changed from when I first started to where I am now, and I think it's going pretty good right now. I just came out with a video on WebMD, which you can find on my website. It came out really, really good, and I don't know. I just kind of jumped into it. Didn't know what I was doing. Spent a bunch of money to get my shirts made, and then of course my mother calls my doctor and says, I don't know what she's doing, and she lost her mind. She just spent a lot of money getting these things made. I don't know if this is a good idea.
Well, you know, they're all trying to protect you, you know. It's
She probably thought I was having some sort of manic episode.
Right, exactly, you know.
Yeah.
Now, do you only sell online? You don't have any storefront, or is that
Yeah, right now I'm only selling online. During the summer, I have a pop-up shop. I usually pop up in Little Italy, but as the weather gets colder and the tourist season lessens, sure. I usually just just do online. So right now you can only get things at schizophrenic.nyc. That's the domain. Okay. That's where you can buy stuff right now.
Right.
I don't have a permanent pop-up right now.
Right.
And besides the T-shirts, what else do you have to sell?
Oh, yes. T-shirts, tanks, pillboxes, stickers, magnets, buttons, my own artwork I also sell, a bunch of fun stuff.
Okay. Were you a fine art major in college, or what was your major?
My major in college was graphic design and a minor in business communications.
Okay, well, that ties right in.
They both fit
right
in there, don't they?
They kind of do, yeah.
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 Okay, right. Okay.
And you have a lot of different, like when we was, and when you had the table set up at the place in Somerville, Jersey there, you had a lot of items on there. You know, there was
I have a lot of, it's a whole different variety of a whole bunch of different stuff. There's tons of things.
And did you come up with all of them, or did you have somebody help you with getting those, or what?
No. I came up with everything you see there. I mean, of course, trial and error. I had white shirts at first. Now I have black shirts mostly. So it's all some white, but now they're mostly black shirts.
Okay.
Just because I found New Yorkers like to wear black shirts more than white shirts. That's what I found.
Okay.
So, do you live in one of the boroughs?
Market research.
Where do you live right now?
I live in Astoria.
Oh, you're in Astoria. I used to live there, too, at one point.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, at one point I lived in Brooklyn. You know, I was born and raised there.
Yeah.
That's still in New York, right?
Okay.
Well, pardon me.
Mm-hmm.
No, but if you could tell the folks out there how they could, you know, look you up, and whether Facebook or Twitter
my website at schizophrenic.nyc. My Twitter is schizophrenicny. My Instagram is schizophrenic.nyc. And what's the other? My Facebook is schizophrenicnyc.
Oh, okay. So it's all pretty much the same then?
All pretty much, but you know, just look up schizophrenic.nyc. You'll find me and everything you need to find.
And if they do that, then they can look at the items just to purchase if they
look
feel like
the
purchasing?
Look at the items. Shop around, have fun, leave comments, do whatever you want to do. Watch my WebMD video. It's really great.
I'm definitely going to watch that. When you had your pop-up shop, what kind of comments did you get from passersby? You know, first of all, I'm sure you had your name displayed prominently, right? Schizophrenic.com. So tell me about some of the dialogue that you would have with people.
I mean, mostly people are really responsive. They like to know, like, kind of like, what is this? I explain to them. I kind of tell them the whole deal. I usually get a lot of people that come over and they just see the sign. They work in the mental health field. They're kind of intrigued. They take a flyer and stuff like that. Every once in a while, I get somebody going, is this a joke? What is this? Explain this to me. And then once I tell them, oh, I have schizophrenia, that's where I started, they go, oh, you have schizophrenia? Oh, you're very brave. And I get like that, stuff like that.
Right.
But, yeah, I know. I talk to everybody. Like, girls have come up to me, and they're like, they just, like, I've had a girl talking about, like, her problems with depression and anorexia and stuff like that. Everybody just, like, likes to open up to me. I don't know, because I'm so open, they just love to open up to me and tell me, like, their stories with mental illness or, like, maybe a family member, or they like to know my history, like my mom's side, my dad's side, what medications are you on, when did this happen? Like, I just get asked zillions and zillions of questions, and I'm completely open to answering them. So, you know, it's interesting all the time.
Right. So you must really feel like you're helping people. I mean, you're one person.
I do feel like I'm helping people because, you know, people tell me things that they don't tell their best friends. Like, I have, you know, I have a lot of friends in the city with different kinds of sports groups I play on, and people that I know, they'll tell me their personal issues with mental health, but, like, our mutual friends have no idea, and they don't want anyone else to know, but they tell me.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, they tell you because you've walked the walk, you know.
Exactly.
And you're not only just...
They know it's a safe space.
It's right. A safe space.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of times, you know, people will call my house or my cell phone because they know, I realize that what it is to have someone in your family with a mental health issue. And, you know, it's not like I'm talking so as I'm reading a book or, you know, we've lived the experience, you know. Like I said, I can't tell you how many times my son was in and out of the hospital after he was hospitalized for, you know, almost 3 years. We lost count, you know, we stopped counting after a while because
it was so many. I can't imagine 3 years. I just can't even imagine 3 years. That must have been so terrible.
It was.
Oh, God.
You know.
Oh, God.
It was, and, you know, I don't know who it was worse on, him or us, you know.
That's a good question.
You know, an afterthought, you know, because after a while, you know, you become acclimated to what you're, you know, like you said, get up at 7, you have to go to this group, that group, this group, whatever. And that's what they did most of the day, was go to groups. And so when he was released, they wanted him to go to the medical center, to what they call a day program there. And he says, Dad, all they do is the same groups I've been listening to for the last almost 3 years. He says, they don't change it. They're the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would, you know, he would go out and sit in the waiting room, you know, and stuff, you know, and they'd call me, oh, your son doesn't come to the group. I says, well, that's because he could probably tell you what the group is, you know. He could probably say it better than you can, you know. But it's just, you know, it was a long haul. And, you know, thank goodness, you know, for the good times, you know, like now for you and him, you know.
But you're getting a much more of a head start, really. Your son is in his 40s now?
Or? Yes.
Right, yeah. But he really wasn't well or functioning well until his, what, mid-30s or something?
Late 30s, yeah.
Late 30s. Yeah. And are you in your 20s still, Michelle?
I'm 29.
29.
You're still in your 20s, see that?
So do you have any goals for the future? Like, would you like to have
goals?
A store?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure yet. I don't know. I want to be a good mental health advocate. That's what I want. I just want everyone to be happy. I want to just touch people's lives in a good way. I want to give people hope. I just want to be inspirational, I guess.
Well, I can't tell you how pleased I am that, you know, that we met, first of all. And second of all, that you were willing to come on and talk on the radio with us.
No problem.
I would love to have you back on again.
Sure, no problem.
And I will send you an email how to download this show if you want to put it on your website or whatever.
Yeah,
or
definitely.
iPad definitely. Or whatever, you know. All that stuff that's above my pay grade, you know. I have a flip-top phone, so that tells you something. Yeah, but
are we almost out of time?
We're almost out of time. Right. If you have one more question, go ahead.
Well, I don't have another question right off the top of my head. Michelle, what would you like to add? What would be something you'd like us to cover? What would you like to add to what you've already said?
Add to what I've already said.
Is there anything you'd like to close with?
Just go visit my website, schizophrenic.nyc.
Let's say that a little slower, too, because people might In fact, maybe we should even spell it because some people can't spell that.
schizophrenic.nyc.
Great. Okay. Good. So do you get calls and comments from people all over the world, or what's your range?
All over the world. I've mailed merchandise to New Zealand, to Australia, mm-hmm. to the Netherlands, mm-hmm. to Scotland, to Ireland.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Like all over mm-hmm. places. Canada, that's not really far away though. Mm-hmm. But
it's far enough.
That's great. How long have you had this online store?
The middle of 2015, I opened the online store, but it didn't quite have what it has now.
Right, right.
So well, I tell you, it's been awesome. And
yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on again, Michelle. And
thank you for having me.
I will have you back. You know, you will come back. I mean that because I think what you're doing is great. And, you know, and I think you're helping people. And I think that's just awesome. So you will be back. And I will email you either tonight or tomorrow. How to download this.
Good.
I think you should come out to 102 and talk to us and sell your t-shirts and so forth.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you.
We could talk about that too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, Michelle. Awesome. Michelle Hammer at schizophrenic.nyc. Look it up and buy a t-shirt or so. All right, Michelle, thank you so much.
You.
We'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters, folks, and we'll be back again next week, same time, same station. And remember, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Join the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and the Flemington Community Partnership for their Card Club networking event hosted by Northfield Bank on Thursday, September 28th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Northfield Bank's Flemington office right here on Main Street. For details and to RSVP, visit hunterdon-chamber.org or call 908-782-7115. See you there.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rab Coin has been for the industry since 1974.